But you know what? There's truth in that word. I'm accused all the time of rewriting the Bible. All I'm doing is going to the language and letting the Spirit lead me into truth. And see, the truth that I've found has changed my life. It hasn't given me great wealth and notoriety, but it's changed my heart. It's made me realize that God is an internal God working inside of me, and I don't have to worry about all those external things. See, I found a truth. And the people who have not found that truth are very intimidated by people who find the truth. Do you realize that? But basically, we are. Because where did he say he wrote the word? In your hearts. So this book is nothing more than an outline to show you what God has truly written in your heart. So I am writing my Bible. Because this Bible we have, we call the King James Bible or the Holy Bible, is only an outline. Is it complete? It's not telling us everything, is it? That's a fact. And see, it's just revealing what God has truly written in our hearts. So sometimes I tell people, yes, I am. Because when I look at Job, that's me. When I read the book of Job, that's me going through all those tests and trials. It's the way I should handle it. Job's the way I should handle it, not the advice of his so-called friends. See, I should handle it like Job did. In all the things that Job did, it says he never sinned with what? His mouth. He never sinned with his mouth. Oh, my God. Huh? See, we've got to understand we're doing these things. And I am. See, I am. And when I say I am, I'm talking about God. God is I am, isn't he? God is writing a Bible in my heart. He's revealing that Bible in my heart. And I'm not listening to what somebody translated 4,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago. I want to know what God's doing in my heart today. If I know that, then I don't have to worry about the rest of it. Paul said in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 3:6, last part of 5th verse into the 6th verse, he said, God has made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, because the letter kills, Spirit gives life. Okay. What do I want? We're already dead. I'm wanting life. Okay. So I'm going to listen to what the Spirit says. And like we said earlier, we can't worry about the accusations. Was Jesus accused? Slandered? I mean, it's part of the process. If you're not being shot at, and I don't mean run out here and be stupid just to get people to throw stones at you, but if you're doing what God tells you, and your life, you're walking in peace, but all the turmoil and all the hell is around you, and you're walking in peace, that tells you you're on the right course. See? You're not biting and trying to defend yourself or anything. You just got to do what you got to do. See, Jesus did not defend himself, did he? Did any of the apostles other than Peter, who only done it momentarily, jerked his sword out and cut a guy's ear off, right? Did the rest of them defend themselves? They took them and done what they wanted to with them. They crucified them. They chopped them up. They tore them with lions. They fed them to lions, whatever they wanted to do. And they didn't fight. And that's a martyr, okay? Well, let's go to chapter 4 of Hosea. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel. For the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no knowledge, there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and every one that dwells therein shall languish with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven. Yea, and fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Let no man strive nor reprove another. For the people are as they that strive with the priest. Therefore shalt thou fall in the day, and the prophet also shall fall with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will also forget thy children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. They eat up the sin of my people, and they set their teeth, their heart on iniquity. And there shall be like people, like priests, and I will punish them for their ways and reward them for their doings. For they shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit whoredoms and shall not increase, because they have left off to take heed to the Lord. Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. My people ask counsel at their stocks, and their staff declares to them, for the spirit of whoredoms has caused them to err, and they have gone a-whoring from under their God. They sacrifice upon the tops of the mountains, and they burn incense upon the hills, under oaks and poplars and elms, because the shadow thereof is good. Therefore your daughters shall commit whoredoms, and your spouses shall commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredoms, nor your spouses when they commit adultery. For themselves are separated with whores, and they sacrifice with harlots. Therefore the people that doeth not understand shall fall. Though thou, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend, and come not into Gilgal, neither go ye up to Beth-Aven, nor swear that the Lord lives. For Israel slides back as a backsliding heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. Their drink is sour, they have committed whoredoms continually. Her rules with shame do love. Give ye. The wind hath bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Some of these chapters are going to run together, but I have to deal with them as I can. In this first verse of chapter 4 again, hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel. Okay? Hear intelligently with the intent to respond. You hear me? It doesn't do you any good to hear the reverberations from my voice and let them bounce off of your eardrums if you never intend to respond to what I say. Does that make sense? If God speaks and you hear and you don't respond, you didn't hear. You just felt vibrations on your eardrum. See, it never was interpreted into your spirit, was it? You only heard it in the flesh. God is telling us we need to hear with the intent to respond. When I hear God, what should I want to do? Not my will, but thy will be done. Whatever you want, God, that's what I want in my life. I don't care how difficult it is, how tough it may seem, that's what I want to do. That's what my heart has to say. I can't say, okay, heart, now you've got to get in line. No, that's what your heart will do when God gets a hold of you. When He releases that love in your life, all you want to do is love Him back because He loved you first. It's not about you trying to earn God's respect. God put His love in you, you'll respond. But He said, hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel. Is He talking to everyone on the earth? No. He's talking about a group of people. He's talking about people that are truly God's sons. He's talking about first fruit. Okay? The word for should be because the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. Are we inhabitants of the land? Sure we are. God's got a controversy with us. That means He has a dispute with what we're doing. We're not obeying Him, are we? God would never have a controversy with us if we obeyed what He said, would we? We'd never have a controversy there. And He says, because there is what? There's the reason. There's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. That's why we have all the turmoil in our lives. There's no reason to have turmoil in our lives with what is available to us today. We have mercy. We have truth. We have judgment. We have knowledge. We have all these things available to us, don't we? Through the person of Christ. Right or wrong? Jesus said, I am truth. He is mercy. He is compassion. He is knowledge. He's wisdom. He's power. He's everything. We have that, and every one of us can say, He's in me. I have everything. I'm missing nothing. I have Christ. Then why is there a controversy? Think about it. Why is there a controversy? Because there is not this truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. We don't have the knowledge of God being there. We don't believe God is really there. We have become a church that is a bunch of parrots. We just parrot what someone said that sounded cute. You'll get somebody come up with a cute saying. I was like, oh, I got to write that down so I can say it. Well, see, if it's not alive in my heart, I can repeat all I want to repeat. What good does it do? What good does it do to repeat and to mock what someone else said? Does it mean anything? Have a nice day. I love you. It don't mean nothing because they don't mean it in their heart. If they loved you, they'd love you, and you wouldn't have to worry about it, would you? See? Just one of those things they just take for granted. But because of all this stuff not being in land, that's why God has a controversy with us. I know in Isaiah 5, he said he's done everything he can do for his garden, for his vineyard. He's done everything. He's removed the stones. He's tilled the land. He's planted it with the choicest vine, and yet it still brings forth wild grapes or poisonous stinking berries. He did it. See, his hands did everything for us, and we won't believe it. That's why he has a controversy. We just can't believe. Abraham was nothing more than a shadow and a type of who? You. How did Abraham become a child of God? He believed what God said, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness. Right? So how are you going to be found righteous? Is it by not smoking, drinking, cussing, and running with women? Come on, that's ridiculous. It's only by what we believe in God. And I can't believe something that doesn't follow the pattern of his book. Right? But when I believe what God says, to the point that no matter what anyone else says to me, I still take God first. How many times do you think I've had an opportunity to be swayed back some other way by someone speaking to me? People, you know, if you just not tell everybody the whole truth at one time, it's just too shocking. I didn't write it. See, I didn't write it. Paul says, I have not shunned to declare the whole gospel unto you in Acts chapter 20, verse 20, verse 27, and verse 35. He said it three times. There's your witness in the mouth of two or three witnesses. He said, I've not shunned to declare the whole gospel. We've got to speak the truth. And when we do that, we've got to know that people are going to come against us. Right? And it's not going to be the worldly people. Who's it going to be? The so-called religious church. They're the ones that's going to come after you. They're the ones that hung him on the tree. You're right. And now it says, verse 2, it kind of gives you some conditions here. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. So he's just giving you some things. See, there's no boundaries here. And this word, they break out, literally they go beyond all boundaries is what it should say. See? There's no boundaries. And isn't that what the world's about today? I can do anything I want to. Just do, if it feels good, do it. I mean, isn't that what they're telling you? The church even tells you that stuff. And in the same breath, they say, if you do this, you'll get in trouble, you'll go to hell. If you do that, you'll go to hell. But do what you feel right. Yeah. See, we've got to get single-minded. We can't have this double-mindedness in us. We're going to get to that before we get to the end of this chapter. We're going to come into that duality. I'll show it to you. But they go beyond all boundaries, and blood touches blood. Literally, bloodshed will be upon bloodshed. See? You kill one, and you got to kill. Just like Moses. Moses killed an Egyptian, didn't he? Because this Egyptian was beating up on one of his Jewish brothers, and Moses realized that that was his Jewish nation, that was his family, some of his family, right? And so he killed this Egyptian who was mistreating another Jew. Well, a few days later, next day, they buried the Egyptian in the sand. You can preach that, the sand man will come and get you. The next day, he sees this Egyptian that he spared his life from, this Jew that was spared from the Egyptian killing him, and Moses had killed the Egyptian, and he tries to break him up, and what's the Jew say to him? What are you going to do, kill me too, like you did that guy? See? It'll come back and get you when you try to settle anything with violence. But see, Moses had to deal with that. He tried to take blood, and he'd had to kill that man to cover up the fact, because he knew he killed him. See? Bloodshed begets bloodshed. We take someone's life, and it doesn't mean literally, it can be, but when we spiritually take someone's life, we're going to have to cover it up again with another death, aren't we? Because somebody's going to know, and somebody else is going to know. And it's just a multiplication of the wickedness and evil in the earth. It just keeps going on and on and on. Verse 3, therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwells therein shall languish. The word therefore is really two words. It should say this, therefore rightly or therefore justly shall the land mourn. See, the word rightly or justly should be in there. So it's not suffering unjustly, are they? When there's a problem in the land, it's there for a reason, isn't it? Because we have lived the wrong way. We have believed the wrong things. So, when he says, the land shall mourn. What are we? We're the land. And everyone that dwells in the land shall what? It says languish in the King James, but it literally says they will grow feeble or become exhausted with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven. Yea, even the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Who's removing them? It's His purpose. See, all them things are going to happen, see? Yet let no man strive nor reprove another, or literally judge another man, because your people are as they that what? Literally, they're they that hold a controversy with the priest. They hold a controversy with the priest. Well, you know what? If everybody, and we've had this in the past, people come in and want to argue with me. Is this the place to come and argue? It's not a place to come and argue. If we have a disagreement, we can talk about it. But do we have to come and argue? What kind of an atmosphere does that set? Yeah, it just quenches the spirit, and nothing fruitful is going to come out of it. There's a time and a place for everything, right? But this is not a place to come and argue and fuss. We can discuss, we can have differences of opinion, but we don't have to argue, do we? This is not what it's for. So what do you think, what kind of atmosphere do you think these people set when they want to argue with the priest? Could be. Yeah. But just look into the realm of the, quote, church today. In this country, don't we have a democratic church? It's set up with a board of elders and deacons, and everybody controls what the preacher does. Right? Don't you think, well, that most of these churches, when a preacher comes in, he's supposed to be the head of the church? Is he? No. See, he can't do what God tells him, even if he is a man of God. He can't do what God says, or they're going to do what with him? You're out the door, see? They have a controversy with the priests, because the priest is hearing God. You know, even in the Old Testament, when these priests were wicked priests, and God even said they were wicked priests. Look at Eli. He was a terrible priest and a terrible father. But you know who Eli heard? He heard God. Is that amazing? But the people still want to strive with the priest. Does it make any difference who God chooses as a priest? It's His choice, isn't it? See, but the people today want to argue. They think they've got seniority in a church. There's no such thing. We're either in Christ or we're not. God is no respecter of persons. Then how can we think that someone's better than anybody else? Because of a position or because of longevity in a place? I heard one say one time, I couldn't leave this church because my grandma paid for that piano up there. Well, if you want to sit there and watch that piano rot to the ground, go ahead. You know, what difference does it make? That piano won't take anybody anywhere, will it? Except down. They got the wrong thinking process. But they're all striving with the priests, having controversies. Therefore shalt you fall in the day. Hello. Did he say, maybe you would? What did he say? You shall fall in the day. What day? The day of the Lord. When it comes to the day of the Lord, we understand this is the day of the Lord. And if we want to argue and fuss and carry on and have a controversy with what God is doing, and Jesus is the prophet, priest and king, right? You want to argue with that priest that God has set, go ahead. But he said, what's going to happen to you? What's going to happen? You're going to stumble and fall. You're going to fall in that day. You're trying to walk your own individual walk instead of walking the walk of God. And he said, and the prophet also shall fall with you when? In the ignorance. As long as I think that I can argue and fuss with the priest that God has set, I don't think a priest that God sets has any more right or any more love or any more respect from God than anybody else. But God still set him in that position, right or wrong. See? He put him in a place of authority. That's his choice. They're no better than anybody else. But as long as you want to fuss and fight instead of trying to learn, if the people that come to argue with the priest, as I get a lot to argue with me, if they would sit and study 1/10 of the time that I spend in the Word, they wouldn't even begin to argue with me. They wouldn't. Because they would see what I'm saying. The only reason they're arguing is because they don't see what I'm saying, and they won't want to take the time to dig into it and find out the truth. Didn't Paul say, study to show yourself approved? A workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing or accurately handling the word of truth? See? It takes time. It's not easy. Do you think Paul had it easy studying these scriptures? He didn't have all the tools we have today. He didn't have no computer to dig into, did he? He had a few writings. But most of Paul had to do was rely on what God spoke in his heart. And Paul was no different a man than you and I. He was no different. Jesus was no different, was he? They were just humans that God chose to place something within. He was a vessel. And that's what you have to realize. But the vessel has to be willing. I have to recognize what God is doing in my life, and I got to respond intelligently, don't I? Hear and respond intelligently. Hear intelligently and respond. Look at the last part of verse 5. And I will destroy your mother. What's your mama? What's your mama? I'm going to destroy your mother. Do you think God's going to come around and kill all the women? Huh? Yeah. But see, that's where we look at security. That's our religious system we could see. He's going to do away with the woman, mama. But guess what? He's talking about your soul. That old natural soul. See, soul, the female side is what gives you birth. Mama gives you birth, doesn't she? And all the things that I am in my heart came from my mother, my birthplace up here. See, in my soulless realm, all the problems I have came out of where? My soul, my woman. See, not natural woman, but my soul realm. He said, I'm going to destroy that soulless side. See? Verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of my knowledge, is what it should say. See, I'm destroyed. See, today people are filled with knowledge. Oh, the information highway is booming. I mean, they can get on the internet and find anything they want in just a matter of minutes, can't you? You can spend days and months on there just on and on and on and on and on. I can get caught up in it. But see, it's just knowledge. Do you think God's interested in how to make a bomb or all this information about different medical terms and all these things that you can find on the internet? It's His knowledge that we're destroyed for lack of. If we have the knowledge of God, guess what else we'll have? God. If I have the knowledge of Mike sitting right there, I have Mike. He's there. I know he's there. See, there's no doubt about that, is there? I know he's there. And if I have the knowledge of God, then I know there really is God. See, not just something I say in my intellect, but I know. I will have a relationship with God. Is that right? So my people are destroyed for lack of my knowledge because you have rejected my knowledge. I will also reject you. Did you hear that? You reject my knowledge, I'll reject you. He didn't say he's going to throw you in hell. He said he's going to reject you. Now look what he said. This is what he said he'd reject you at. Huh? I know. He says, I will also reject you that you shall be no priests to me. He said, he didn't say, I'm going to throw you in hell. He said, I'm going to reject you from being my priest. See, it's an honor to minister to God, to minister in His state. It's an honor. And you're going to be rejected because we have no knowledge of Him in our life. There's a lot of people today that are very hypocritical, that are trying to preach the gospel of God without any knowledge of God in their life. They've learned it at a school. I'm going to tell you, books can't teach you about God. A book might tell you there is a God, but you can't have a relationship with God by reading a book. You have to have a relationship with the person. My wife and I cannot have a relationship if I read about her in a book. Is that true? I need her to have a relationship. And see, I need Him in my life. And that's why the people are being destroyed, because the priests are running around with no knowledge. And they're setting themselves up. You know what is a fact today? You can go through all the hard times in our country, and every time that times get hard, the economy goes sour, you know what happens? Church increases. Church membership increases. See? They're talking about recession. You watch people start going to church. See? When it gets bad, they go to church. See? Well, how about the times when it's prosperous? How come they're not praising God when it's prosperous? Well, it's too easy to say, well, you know, I'd rather do this today. I'd rather go out and do this, and I'd rather go out and do that, and all kinds of excuses. The very day you said, boy, you'd play, said, boy, the streets covered, so I could just stay home, you know. But you didn't. See, that's the difference. We've got to have a knowledge of God so strong in our heart that know we need to be dedicated to something. You know, the world sees everybody saying, oh, God this, God that. But where do they see someone who's dedicated enough to put their life into it? Where do that? Where's the people like Martin Luther out of the past? And I have to give it to him for what he did. The people that prayed, and Smith Wigglesworth, that would go for 2 weeks and crawl into a hollow log in the woods and stay for 2 weeks and not come out of that tree till he heard God's voice. Who do we have that has that kind of dedication today that they say, I will abandon all of what humanity has to offer me just to hear God's voice? Who do we have doing that today? I mean, it's very, very few and far between. And the first time you get someone who will attempt to separate themselves, what comes up immediately? The system comes and tries to buy him. All the temptations. And most of them turn right back around and go right back into it again. They go right back. They sell out. They sell out. I've met a lot of men that I really, really respected as men of God. And I see the compromise come in their life. You know, they walk into truth, and then they turn around and go back. And I really can't comprehend how they could do it. I don't comprehend it. Like I told you earlier, Cindy, if I could comprehend why they do what they do, I'd probably do the same thing. And God spoke that to me. Why are you interested in what they do? If you knew why they were doing what they're doing and you could understand it, you'd do the same thing. So I said, thank God, I don't understand it. Doesn't mean my mind still doesn't struggle with why, how could someone think that way? After you've experienced God, you can go back and live on the other side. I don't know. And I still can't, I can't fathom that in my mind. And that'll probably be a mystery to me for the rest of my natural life. But I'm glad I don't understand, because I'd be just like the rest of them. Okay? Now, who is God speaking to in this sixth verse? No, he's talking to priests. They are the children of Israel, but they're priests. So he's talking. He didn't say everybody, but he said, I'm going to reject the ones from being priests, you from being a priest. So he's really talking to the priests. Okay? And 6 through 14, he's really talking to the priests, okay? It's the passage he's dealing with the priests. The last part, he says, seeing that you have forgotten the what? The law there, the word is really precepts or statutes. Okay? Since you've forgotten my precepts or my statutes, the statutes of your God, I will also forget what? Your children. Okay? Your children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Just what I said a while ago. When things are prosperous, what do people do? They walk away from God in their prosperity. Heard a woman one time say, I knew she'd been struggling in her life, and all of a sudden there was this grant came about, and she got this tremendous job. I mean, she'd just been scratching to keep her home, and she was about to lose everything. And her son and his wife went to church with us, and so we knew all about what was going on. And she was asked us to pray for her to do something better, and as the job was coming up. And she gets this job making about $75,000 a year. Okay? Now, she was a tither when she was making the little job barely getting through. And so we pray and ask God to agree to give her this job. Well, it comes about, she gets it, and she gets a $75,000 a year job, and now she didn't even give any more. She didn't give her tithe as much as she was giving off her little salary. She actually gave less than she was when she was on the little job. And the $75,000 a year, she said, that's too much money to give to God. See? They sin against God because of their prosperity. They get wrapped up in what they have and say, I'm sufficient. I don't need anybody else. See, I don't need God anymore because now I've got a lot of money. It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And you know what? She was there for a year or two and just dissolved, went away. The job just flopped, gone. She lost everything she had. You think that's by coincidence? She turned away from God, the job just flopped. She lost everything she had. Home and all, moved away, trying to find a way to live. Embarrassed. Verse 7, as they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame or disgrace. Who changed the glory into shame or disgrace? God did. You don't think he takes away? He plants and he plucks up, doesn't he? He gives you and he takes it away. I think Job said that. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. They eat up the sin of my people. The word eat up doesn't tell you a real understanding of that. Literally it should say, they feed upon the sin of my people. And they lift their hearts up with their iniquity. What are we talking about? Lift up. Pride. It's pride. See, in their own pride, they lift these things up. They lift their heart up with their pride. And they lift their hearts with their iniquity. So all the things they're doing that's wrong and evil, they justify it in their heart. And it's just pride. Just pride. And there shall be, or literally, it shall exist, or it shall be like this, like people, like priests. In other words, you won't be able to tell a difference between the lifestyle of the priest and anybody else. And isn't that common today? If you or I are priests of God, who should know it? Everyone should know it. Not because of the clothes I wear or the way I wear my hair, right? See, it shouldn't be by the clothing or by that, but it should be by my lifestyle. People should know who I am by the way I deal with things in my life, shouldn't they? They should be able to see it. Every one of us, people should know that you're children of God because of the way you live your life. It shouldn't have anything to do with how you dress or how much you have. It has nothing to do with prosperity. Because I'm going to tell you what, poor people have less problems than we do. They don't have to wrestle with as much as we do. They might say, well, I wish I had, but we got so much, we got to protect it. And we get real defensive about what we possess. Okay? Sure. But if the priest is wicked, what have they got? See, they'll be just like it. Seed produces like kind. Paul told Timothy, he said, I begot you as a son, spiritually. So you can produce people after your own lifestyle. People that hear what I am, you're only going to be what I am. I mean, if I am a man of God, what can you be? A man of God or woman of God. If I am a hypocrite, if I am a wicked priest, and I'm deceiving people, that's all I'm going to produce underneath me. That's all it's going to be there. I can't produce... A good tree can't produce evil fruit, right? And a bad tree can't produce good fruit. You can only produce the fruit you are. Okay? And he says, there shall exist people like priests. So they're all going to be the same. You won't be able to tell the difference. They're all going to be wicked. And I will punish them according to their ways and reward them according to their doings. Who's going to take care of this? See, I don't have to worry about this preacher doing this and that preacher doing that and so-and-so doing that because I'm not the judge, am I? God said He will judge this thing, won't He? He said, I will reward them to their ways and their doings. I don't have to worry about it. I can just go to bed and forget about it. Let them deal with their own. Verse 10, because they shall eat and not have enough or never be satisfied. Isn't that the world today? They can never get enough? I mean, look at our economy today. That's one thing. But look at our natural lifestyles. Our country is more overweight than anybody in the world. Look at the buffets they set out before us. You know, I had a man tell me one time it was a house of suicide to go to buffets. Of course, he couldn't control himself either, you know. And we all, I personally struggle with weight. But I'm telling you, our lifestyles are that way. We struggle because we have too much, don't we? We have way too much. And they shall commit whoredoms, or literally they will be unfaithful and shall not increase. Because they have what? Left off or literally neglected to take heed to the Lord. Don't you think God is speaking to every one of us every day? I know He is. Do we have the ability to hear? There's our whole thing. The book says, blessed is he that has ears to hear. We all have ears. We can hear vibrations on our eardrums, can't we? But we got to hear it with our inner ear, our spiritual ear. That's what He's talking about. We've got to hear. Verse 11. Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. There, the word whoredom is literally idolatry. Wine, what's it represent? Wine is revelation or understanding, and it literally speaks of being intoxicated. Okay? Wine intoxicated. First of all, we're talking about idolatry. Okay? The first word, whoredom, speaks of idolatry. So in idolatry and the intoxication, see, wine here speaks of a negative, we're in intoxication, and new wine is understanding. And in the New Testament, it talks about the new understanding. So when I'm into idolatry and I'm taking this new wine, I'm being intoxicated thereby, right? And this new understanding comes in because I'm in intoxication of idolatry. I'm being consumed by the idolatry. My mind is being consumed by idolatry. In idolatry, you have your eyes upon that idol, don't you? And when my eyes are upon the idol, I am consumed or intoxicated by it, and then I get all kinds of new understandings. Why do you think there's 22,000 denominations today? Because they have their eyes on some idol, some kind of an idolatry in their life, and it consumes them, they're intoxicated by it, and they can't hear what God's really saying, so guess what? They get all kinds of understandings. Where did that understanding come from? Where did it come from, Mike? Out of their thought, out of the bottomless pit, see? Because their mind wasn't fixed upon Christ, so my mind picks up and runs with all kinds of things. And see, we hear things, and we don't take enough time to understand what we hear. When we hear something negative, what do we normally do with it? If it's bad, what do you do with it? You just kind of kick it aside. But you know, we ought to think about these things. I mean, look at what we hear. Because we hear things and we don't really wipe them out. It's like our computers. We get an email and we don't want that email, we just delete it. Now, was it really deleted when you clicked on that delete button? It goes into a storage bin, don't it? Into the deleted files. And it's still there, isn't it? And see, that's what we do a lot of times. We just click on it and put it in the deleted bin, deal with it later. We don't take the time to make sure that I understand that is vile and wicked and evil, and I got to destroy it. I'm going over, I'm going to put it in the delete bin, and now I'm going to empty my trash bin. I'm not going to let it stay in there. Do you understand what I'm saying? We take for granted the negatives we hear, and we don't take time to judge that truth or untruth that we've heard. We just want to casually go through life and not take the time to look at these negative things that come in our life. We got to look at this thing and say, that is wrong, I'll delete that out of my thought process. And they'll come back subtly when we just leave them in the trash bin. See, we've got to make sure we empty that thing totally out. If there's a seed there, will it grow? Sure it will. I'm not going to give it anything to grow in. I'm going to delete, and then I'm going to empty my trash bin. Okay? We all ought to do that. We need to hear these negatives. We're going to hear them all the time. We hear them casually riding down the road in our cars, in our trucks, at work, on TV. I mean, anywhere you go, you hear people say things. And you may not even really realize you hear it. Your subconscious picks it up. It's like a big magnet, you know, just picking it up. And you don't even realize you're gathering all this information. Everything that you've ever heard, tell me where it's at. It's in your mind. And even though it's negative, it's in there. And when you turn a search mode loose in your mind to find something, it's hard to tell what come out of there. Isn't it? Until you empty the trash. The only way I can empty the trash is put so much of Christ within me, so much of the Word of God within me, that I can't, haven't got room for anything else. That's the only way you can do it. Where am I at? Verse 12. My people ask counsel at their stocks. You know what it literally says? They ask counsel from a piece of a tree. From just a stump of a tree. Isn't that ridiculous? They go to talk to a piece of a tree. It's really totally ridiculous. But you know it's no different today. Because a tree represents what? Humanity. And today, we go talk to humanity to get the answer to God. What do you think about it? I think that preacher's crazy. What do you think? Well, yeah, I think he is too. See? Talking to humanity. You talk to God to get the God answers, don't you? See? You don't need to talk to humanity to get somebody to give you a witness of what's right or wrong. You need God to give you the witness of what's right and wrong. He's already written it in your heart. Is that truth? If he's written in your heart, then you've got to ask him to give you a witness of it. See, I don't want somebody to witness of me and say, oh yeah, you're a good guy, you're right. I want you to witness with God what I'm saying is right or wrong. I'm not concerned about it. I know what God spoke to me. I just hope you can hear what I'm saying in my heart. Okay? That's all I'm concerned about, that you hear God in your heart. I don't care if you ever hear me. I'm not important in this thing. You've got to hear God. But my people ask counsel from a piece of a tree or a stump of a tree, and their what? Literally, their walking stick declares to them. Yeah, there you go. Got a walking stick. And this stick's going to tell me how to live my life. Another piece of wood. It's just a crutch to hold up your humanity. My humanity don't need held up. Because of what reason? What's the reason? The spirit of whoredoms has to cause them to err. Literally, that word whoredoms again is idolatry. The spirit of idolatry. The spirit of idolatry. I'm going to tell you something. One of the spirits that every human being on the face of this earth has got a spirit of idolatry when they are conceived. Everybody has it. Everybody is seeking to worship something. They're seeking to worship something. Why do you think so many people today are chasing after athletes and movie stars and singers? A spirit of idolatry in them. They're wanting to worship something. And rather worshiping the truth, they'll worship something they can see. Israel told their hearts when they asked Samuel, said, give us a king. Tell God to give us a king. You got one. God is your king. No, we want one like the heathens have. We want one like the Gentiles. We want to be able to see him. He said, if you ask for him, if I give it to you, he'll take your daughters for wives, he'll rape your fields, he'll take everything. He'll be cruel to you, he'll make you slaves. And he said, we still want one. Sounds stupid, don't it? But we turn around and do the same things today. We let our mind take over and our flesh take over and put us in all kinds of bondage. What's the difference? None. It's just their heart. It's that spirit of idolatry that has caused them to err, and they have gone a whoring from under their God. See, they're no longer faithful to God. They went to themselves. They went to their humanity. They sacrifice or offer sacrifice or worship upon top of the mountains or the high places. Wonder where that is. Right up on top in their minds. See, that's where their worship is, in their mind. And that's where the worship should be. But it should be to God, shouldn't it? The worship is in our hearts and our minds. and they burn incense, or literally pray, upon the hills. Incense represents prayer. And under oaks, and poplars, and elms, right? Because the shadow thereof is good. Now, why are they worshiping and offering prayer under those trees, under humanity? Why? Because it's comfortable, isn't it? Yep. But it's still comfortable, he says, right? Because the shadow thereof is good. It's comfortable, right? Therefore, your daughters shall commit idolatry, and your spouses shall commit adultery, or literally they'll be unfaithful, right? Now, where did it all start from? Look at this word up here. Origin determines destination. Where did the idolatry and whoredom start? In the priests. In the priest. There's a priest in you, isn't there? But do I want my priest to be faithful to God or faithful to me? Usually we want our priest to be faithful to us, say, and not to God. He said, but your daughters and your spouses will commit adultery and idolatry. And look in 14. I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredoms or idolatry, nor your spouses when they commit adultery. God says, I'm not going to punish them. You know why? You're going to reap what you sowed. Started in. My life wasn't meant to be yet, but I know had it been otherwise, my whole life and everything would have been different. Okay? I know that. So it's going right back to what I'm reaping and sowing. Okay?
Isn't it saying here, too, that he had an obligation to us to our children?
Sure, absolutely. And he's going to take care of them. He's not going to punish them. We have an obligation, and so does he. He said, because these men who are separated, or literally who are separated with or accompany whores, for they that for themselves, these men are separated to whores themselves. See? They're saying they're not faithful to start with. If I'm not faithful, how can I produce a child that's faithful? Come on, it can't happen, can it? The only way I'm going to produce something faithful, it's got to come out of my seed, my seed's got to be faithful. Good tree cannot produce evil fruit. Evil tree cannot produce good fruit. James, right? James 3. You got to understand it. And they sacrifice with what? Actually, it's temple harlots, temple prostitutes. See, they sacrifice with temple harlots or temple prostitutes. See, in the Old Testament, they had what they called temple prostitutes. They hung around and they had sex with the priests. Well, it's no different today. There's people hanging around the church just for that adultery and that idolatry. You ever heard of man worship? That's what it is. See, that's temple prostitutes. They didn't come in to worship God. Who'd they come for? The man. See? They come after the man. And that's a temple prostitute. Do you realize how many of the churches are filled with temple prostitutes? You go to these ministries where they got 10,000 people, and if the man will just walk by and I think I'm going to faint. He touched me. See? Well, God can walk through and touch them, and it don't mean nothing. See, they're temple prostitutes. They're just there to have the flesh ministered to. Churches is full of it today. They don't want to see it, do they? There's that's a whole bunch of temple prostitutes. You can see that every time he comes around. But the last part of this verse says, Therefore, the people that does not understand shall fall. That ought to energize you to know that the thing that keeps me from falling is understanding. Understanding keeps me from falling. Years ago, God spoke to me when I was in a Methodist church, and I read a verse in Matthew 24:24, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's where it says, "If it were possible, even the very elect should be deceived." My God, how many is going to be deceived? Everybody except the elect, right? If possible, even they would be deceived. But he says, if possible, they would be deceived. That tells me it's not possible, okay? So I just asked God, I said, well then, how can I know that I'm not deceived? How can we know as a people today that we are not deceived? That's exactly what he said to me. Know my word. Know my word. He didn't say know a translation. Don't know what King James said. Don't know what the Amplified said. Don't know what the Living Bible said. Uh-uh. He said, know my word. And his word is what he spoke, not what somebody thinks he said. And you know what? From that time on, I've walked with more confidence, and as I walk more daily, I have more confidence in what I'm saying and what I'm doing is what God is telling us to do. And it's becoming so evident that it's so different, it's so foreign, it's alien to what the church is teaching. But Jesus said this, my kingdom is not of this world. In other words, he's saying, I'm alien to this stuff. All this religion you're doing is alien to me, because that's not my stuff. He said, if my kingdom were of this world, my disciples would fight. But they're not, so don't worry. We're not going to fight you. We'll go on. We'll make it. Because it's part of your punishment coming back on you. You have to deal with it. See? If you create a problem, he's going to let it come back upon you. Some of his reaping and sowing. See, if the daughters and the wife are unfaithful because of what the husband did, the priest. Okay, he wasn't faithful. So what did that create? Unfaithful spouses, unfaithful children, right? Okay. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend, or literally be found guilty once. And come not ye unto where? Gilgal speaks of a place of unlawful worship. Neither go you up to Beth-Aven, the house of vanity, nor swear the Lord lives, because Israel rebels as a stubborn heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a lamb or a young ram learning to butt in a large place or in a place of liberty. Ephraim, which means duality, dual, double, is joined to idols or idolatry. Let him alone. Now, what does that say? Let me go back and read it again the way it should say. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, yet let not Judah, the celebrated one, be found guilty once. See, Jesus was of the tribe of Judah, wasn't he? The Lion of the tribe of Judah. And come not to Gilgal. Don't come to this place of unlawful worship. Judah, the celebrated one in you, will not go to the place of unlawful worship. Do you hear me? He will not go there, and you can't go there. As Judah, as the overcomer, you cannot go to that place of unlawful worship. Neither go to Beth-Aven. That's the house of vanity. Don't go to the house of vanity. Judah, don't go there. Nor swear the Lord lives. Because Israel rebels as a stubborn heifer. Now what is a heifer? No. A heifer is a female cow that's never come to maturity yet where she can reproduce. And that's where the church is today. And that's where our soul is today. We come to a place where we know our soul has the ability to reproduce, but it's never come to the place that it reproduces what it's supposed to. Do you realize that? See, we haven't come to the place where we reproduce what we're supposed to reproduce. We're reproducing what man tells us, But we're not reproducing what we're supposed to, because he said we're a stubborn heifer. That's stiff-necked, prideful. That's why we're not reproducing. We'll never come to maturity as long as stubbornness and pride is in our lives. And you don't have to be a real loud person to be arrogant, do you? Or prideful, do you? But you can be quiet. It doesn't make any difference. You can be rebellious in all kinds of ways. But God says this about this stubborn heifer, this rebellious heifer, stubborn heifer. Now the Lord will feed them as a what? A young ram. That's a young male ram, lamb, in a place of liberty. Okay? And Ephraim, speaks of duality, is joined to idolatrous images. Let him alone. Two. Tells me that's two covenants. First and second. See, there's still duality in the mind. True? In the dust realm, sand realm, there's still duality. Let them alone. Let them stay there. What's it to you? If God tells you to walk on up to the stars, then what should you do? Go on to the heavens. Huh? That's it. If he tells you to do it, you take off and go. See? When he talked to the man in Luke 9 and said, come follow me. And he said, suffer me to bury my father first. See? Wrong thought process. Wrong thought process. Start hoofing it, just like you said, Ed. If God says, follow me, then what should you do? Follow him. Don't worry what people tell you. Listen to what God tells you.
Just do it. Put your Nikes on and go.
Well, the word Nike means, in the Greek, victory. Just do it. And guess what you'll have? Victory. That's all you got to do. Just do it. But Ephraim, the duality, is joined to idolatrous images. See, the only way you can be idolatrous is have duality in your mind. As long as I have duality in my mind, I will be into idolatrous images. Two, be confused, mixed, right? As soon as I become single-minded in the mind of Christ, I won't have any problem with that anymore. Does that mean my flesh will never cry out again? No. Your flesh is going to cry out as long as you're walking upon this earth. But you have to make a choice. You listen to God, or are you going to listen to that idolatrous thing in your head? That humanity that's crying out. Your flesh cannot inherit the kingdom of God, can it? Flesh and blood cannot inherit. But my spirit is already perfected, but I'm letting my woman take control over my man. There's my problem. My soul is running the show. There's my problem. Because she will minister to my flesh. And my man will say no. No. You're at my side. You're my helpmate. You're not my boss. Christ is the head, not my soul. If I understand that, I'll be all right. Verse 18. He said, their drink is sour. Drink represents their words. Anything you drink, you know, understanding and word. So everything they drink is sour. That would tell me that it's probably not true, is it? Yep. They have committed whoredoms or idolatry continually. Her rulers with shame do love. Literally, they love shame more than their glory. Who's got the Living Bible? Somebody got it? Read that 18th verse. The wind has bound her up in her wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Oh my God. This is the most beautiful verse in this whole passage. Look what it says. The wind. The word is ruach. It's spirit. The spirit has bound not her, but them, up in his wings, and they shall be delayed because of their sacrifices. Goes right back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. That while they were in ignorance, in darkness, was on the face of the deep, the Spirit brooded, He protected them. He didn't move, rather, the King James says, moved on the waters. He brooded. If you look at the word, it's brooded. And the Spirit brooded upon the waters, and brooding is protecting. He protected the minds. And He's telling you right here, even though through all this idolatry, everything going on, He said the Spirit has bound them up in His wings. Does that sound like He's taking care of them? In the midst of all this idolatry and whoredoms and unfaithfulness and lying and stealing and cheating and all this stuff, blood touching blood, all these bad things, He says, My wings have bound them up and they're going to be all right. That ought to just tickle you inside. Just give you one of them warm, fuzzy feelings to know that God is going to take care of all these people. See, I don't care if they did 10,000 times more bad things than I could even think of, God is still going to love them and take care of them. That tickles me inside. See, because all those people that commit all those things, and the ones I see doing the worst things, are people that know there is a God, but they've been lied to so much, they just look at it this way. If I'm going to hell, I might as well enjoy it while I can. Because if I'm going to have to go through that, I might as well get all I can get while I'm here. And I understand their thinking process. I understand that. I've been there. See? But then I found out that someone loved me, my Father. And see, I know that those people that's hurting like that, and they're hurting. They may never tell you they're hurting, but they're hurting. Because I've been there. And I know that all they need is someone to love them and tell them the truth. Not to be their girlfriend, but to tell them the truth. And that's what took me and turned me around. He told me the truth. And you know what the truth of the whole matter is? God is love. And He loves me. And I know that. It doesn't make any difference about anything else. I know He loves me, and He's fed the baby within me, and that baby has begun to grow up and become a man. And you know what? Once that man grows up, he's alive forevermore. Ain't nobody can take him down. Not even me. My own self, my Dave, can't take down the Christ that's within me. I don't have that power within me. It's gone. Any questions?